The trembling giant refers to a colony of a single male quaking aspen, an organism with a massive underground root system. The root system is estimated to be 80,000 years old, and collectively the plant is estimated to weigh 6 million kilograms. The bottom of aspens are darker, giving way to the whiteness, the lightness that comes after a rough patch. A lightness that comes from a forest where one cannot see the massive roots, the massiveness of what binds and connects the entire colony, the entire forest. This past March, my friend Justin and I went driving in the Rockies. He told me that the aspen trees have interconnected root structures that connect them all. A forest of aspen trees, though at first glance looks like a cluster of trees, is in fact more connected than one might see. An attempt to uproot an aspen tree is in fact an attempt to uproot an entire forest. Ideally, family would be similar to an aspen forest, a group of interconnected individuals that stand strong and separate, yet at the roots are intricately connected. Not only intricately connected, but within this connection, protected. If one is uprooted, we all become a little uprooted. But of course, family is not always like this. The roots we grew up out of, the roots we put down, do not always connect and interconnect the way we desire. They often, in fact, have minds of their own, roots and shoots that interact differently with others, creating a more complex structure, a more complex forest than that of the aspen tree. But family and roots are at the core connected through love. And we all know that love is a complicated root structure in and of itself. It is through seeing the complicated as still connected that the lightness can come after a rough patch. In Neil Gaiman's piece, The Day the Saucers Came, Gaiman weaves together a day of unbelievable chaos, a day where everything is not only turned inside out, but moving in ways that push everyone's idea of normal back to where normal came from. The floodgates are breaking, and we are engulfed by genies and sprites that are offering us wishes and wonders, eternity's charm, cleverness and true, brave hearts and pots of gold. Giants are fofumming across the land. There are drunk angels and zombies. And not only is everything changing, but it's scary. The roots are twisted and mangled, and it is unclear how to ground them again. The main character is in the throes of the most epic, surreal paintings, yet she sits and all she can see is the phone, and all she can hear is a call that has yet to come. Though we may not always be thrown into situations quite as dramatic as a time machine day, sometimes it does feel that there might as well be zombies and giants, as things feel so chaotic and so out of our control, our roots mangled and twisted. In the midst of this chaos, however, there are people and root systems that we will love so much that will ground us beyond belief as individual or as family units, grounding and loving us so much that we won't even see the zombies. Though my root structure is one of complexities and perhaps unruly roots, it is one of strength. Perhaps not as straightforward as an aspen's root strength, but one of strength nonetheless. Part of our want for family is a want to be held, preferably to be held in home. My sisters and I, when we were younger, were always creating families. Families creating homes and strange imaginary situations. We created homes out of cardboard fake bricks that, for whatever reason, always had to have a tea window, in which we would rest our tea sets and, of course, serve a tea. We went up into the woods at the back of our house and made stick homes that we could crawl into and store Milanos until we re-remembered them and found them stale. We made towns with our cousins, where the most angsty amongst us rode around on sticks as sheriffs, and those of us who wanted to nest made elaborate plant bouquets for both our stick homes and those of our neighbors. Of course, there are the entrepreneurs among us who had snagged actual food from the kitchen and sold off saltines for an exorbitant amount of the ever-rising value currency, the acorn. I'm sure there are a lot of reasons for why children play house, why they imitate adult ways and reinsert into them their own, often more whimsical and, of course, more unreal circumstances. I believe one of the reasons is a subconscious want to test our home, to test out family, if things changed, were altered, if things fell apart, if for whatever reasons our familial supports, primarily our parents, were suddenly not there or could not take care of us, would a home remain? Could we hold each other in the face of loss? Could we, for instance, be able to survive with a 7-year-old Jeffrey as our sheriff and Camille as our resident capitalist? Would we still have a home? Could we, in fact, go on feeling held? These questions have very different answers. Could we actually survive on stolen crackers, acorns, and the strange beauty of fern bouquets? Not for long. Children, of course, need guardians, parents, parental figures, but we also discovered something in our home play. We did create home between each other. We held each other enough to play it again, to play home again and walk back to our parents, who would in fact make us a better dinner than mud pies and wildflower pizza. Part of how we held this home together, part of how we related, was creating our own narratives and testing it out. Most religions work on creating a home through a common narrative, a narrative that speaks to the values, ethics, and beliefs of that body of people, and a narrative that ties it all together. In Unitarian Universalism, there isn't really a narrative. There is no tie to a body of myths, no main story. Though we may look to Jesus for lessons on sacrifice and Krishna and Radha for the deepest of love, the narratives we are left with is our own. I have struggled with this. I've struggled in times of pain, in times when my own narrative seemed flawed or not enough. What narrative do I turn to? I asked Phyllis, our interim minister, the other day if she had any good narratives on family. She gave me a piece from Reverend Frank Hall entitled Dance as Spiritual Moments. He writes, "There were 6 of us, Unitarian ministers, having lunch together in the church library. We meet once a month for support to help each other in our work and in our lives. The conversation came around to the topic of prayer. Do you use pastoral prayer in your worship service on Sunday?" someone asked. "No, sometimes. Well, depends what you mean. I don't call it pastoral prayer, but yes, I pray." From prayer and meditation, the conversation turned to spirituality. "For me," he says, "spirituality is primary. I mean, it's always there inside me." One of the men says, "I'm not sure if I can understand what you're talking about." Then, "I get in touch with that part of myself when I listen to special music. It carries me away. And I get in touch with it with my family, my kids, and with my wife, well, when we're getting along." Then he said, "I don't want to get too sentimental or emotional, but that seems to be what's happening as I get older. I watch my kids growing up, and it just gets to me. It touches me." Last Saturday night, he says, "At a family party, I found myself holding back tears as I saw all these people I've known all my life since I was a kid. Now they're old, and I realize that in 10 years, most of them will be gone. And there was a moment, people hushed as music was playing, and I turned to see my son dancing with my mother. Everyone was watching. It was so beautiful." I finished this piece and, thinking of my fear of narratives, thought, I do have a narrative, and my narrative is based on what I find in my aspen grove, what I find in my family, however unseen it is in the deep roots that are there and growing. When I doubt love, I turn to the stories of my grandmothers. One story of a grounded, organized, kind, and no-nonsense woman who found true love over a Coke and a double date. Another story of a passionate, spunky Irish woman who got on a cruise ship to America to chase the man she knew she loved. When I get confused of which Christmas tree to buy, I think of the stories of my Uncle Stevie and his commitment to the Charlie Brown Christmas tree. I have aunts that fill my narrative with stories of job success, spunk, love, and stellar dance moves. I have uncles who give my narrative laughter and dreams, and so many cousins that give my narrative motion and whimsy. In recognizing these narratives, I also recognize the narratives of more complication, the narratives of hurt, loss, of anger, of sometimes forgiveness, the parts of narrative that sometimes we forget to acknowledge and take advantage of, the roots we don't see yet but rely on for support, for growth. It is when we recognize these narratives, when we pay attention to the roots underground, that not only allow us to be more forgiving of the parts of our family that are more difficult, but often moments of realization where we extend our family and find the needed comfort outside our blood relations, building out our wider family. From here, we can feel and appreciate all the family members we have, the family you come home to, perhaps not your blood relations, but the family that when you come home, they are baking bread, cranking hip-hop, and inviting you to watch The OC and other delightful teen dramas on living room couches. The ones who wait up for you because you have forgotten your keys. The family that is there for you at work, school, who support your endeavors, who know when to hand you a cup of coffee. The families we form when we love someone more than we thought we could. The families we form because we desire a narrative as rich and as deep as our love. We all exist in narratives, in familial narratives, in stories in which the strongest ties that bind us together is often our love. Our narratives and stories attach us to a wider love through our individual love, that attach us to narratives that, though we may not always be aware of, we are a part of. To lose yourself to love is to lose yourself to something greater. And maybe, just maybe, if we pay attention to the twists and turns of our roots, if we pay attention to the intersections and families that make up our root systems, we will find this love. Sometimes we need to ask ourselves to pay attention to our root systems. Sometimes we need to push ourselves to find someone who will wait out the zombies with us. And sometimes we must dig, climb, and run to find our narrative. We will fall, get tangled up, but inevitably lose ourselves to something greater that may be much closer and much more accessible than we could imagine.